of operation and information about materials and disposal fees at 607-832-5800. WIOX is supported by Roxbury Wine and Spirits on Main Street in Roxbury. Open every day except Sunday from 12 noon to 6 p.m. for contactless curbside pickup or delivery to your open vehicle trunk or hatchback. Selection of wines listed at RoxburyWineAndSpirits.com. Orders by phone or email 607-326-6200 or Jeff at RoxburyWineAndSpirits.com. WIOX is supported by the Old Mill Restaurant, planning on opening soon in Roxbury, former site of the Public Lounge just a few years ago, and the former site of Roxbury's original grain mill and blacksmith shop 100 years ago. The new Old Mill Restaurant's decor will feature the original mill machinery and blacksmith artifacts and be open every day for dinner, private parties, community events, and streamside dining in the summer. A place for folks to gather, talk, eat, drink, and party. The Old Mill Restaurant, planning on opening soon in the heart of Roxbury. More information at oldmillroxbury.com.
Hi, this is Audie Martello, host of the Catskills Cafe, inviting you to take a seat with me in my virtual coffee house and listen to classic folk, folk rock and bluegrass, new and traditional sounds, plus interviews with indie and established artists. Come and join me every Sunday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. right here on WIOX Roxbury, community radio, live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
Good evening. You're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXRadio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., we talk about a different forest-related topic here on WIOX 91.3 FM. And every third Wednesday, we talk to a familiar voice who's been coming on this show for, I don't know, Gary, dang near 10 years.
Yeah, since 2012.
Okay, so yeah. 9 years.
Yeah.
So this is Gary Mead. You've probably heard him before if you've listened many times in the past, but Gary Mead is the owner of Gary Mead Gallery in Margaretville, and he's a local wood artist. He owns a sawmill. He's got a whole career working with trees in the woods.
Yeah, I love wood. I can't get enough of it. And so, I talked to Rye about a month ago and said I recently had a couple of people come to me with a problem with powder post beetles in their wood. One was a house that was dismantled. It was about an 1840s house in Long Island somewhere, and they dismantled it and brought it, the wood, to me to kill the powder post beetles. Because one way to kill them is to put them in the kiln at about 135 degrees for a few days, and that definitely takes care of them. And then about a week later, I got another call from a Manhattan artist that said he had some wood that he was making a piece of art. He went out in the woods and just pulled, you know, sticks out of the woods that were on the ground, and he was working on this project in the shop, and he's, you know, said, "Oh, I heard you know a lot about wood and this and that," and he emailed me, and I emailed him back and asked him what he had, and he took a picture of it and showed me, and I said, "Well, you know, you got powder post beetles. We can throw them in the kiln and cook them and dehydrate them and kill them." And so he brought the wood to me. So, you know, I told Ryan, I said, "You know, we should really do a show on this. And at least, you know, whatever we don't get to tonight, or we don't just, you know, talk about, or if you have an issue with it, just Google it." And they have a lot of information on there how to, you know, get rid of them. Because it's a different way to get, you know, if they're in your barn, you can't take the beams and bring them to the kiln. If they're in a standing structure, you can't do that. So there's other ways to get rid of them by with sprays. And, you know, there's organic sprays and there's sprays that aren't so organic, but... You know, it's basically, you, when you spray them, you suffocate them, and you close those holes up, and it'll kill them. But they won't bite people, but they will. They can dismantle a whole barn. A lot of these old barns that you see that, you know, you see the roof caved in. You know, I got thinking about this years ago, and you know, I think. You know, the roof may not have leaked if the powder post beetles weren't chewing the rafters. And it makes them weak. I mean, they eat it, and it weakens it. And they riddle a little holes, and they break the grain. And, you know, they're actually eating the cells of the wood. And, I mean, if you go in your basement or your barn, you see... It looks almost like talcum powder, and it's got a little bit of a yellowish color to it. Well, depending on the wood, if it's a piece of cherry, it'll be a reddish color. If it's ash or oak or maple, it'll be a kind of a yellowish color. But it's the finest dust that you would see. And, you know, they can freeze and come back to life, and it thaws. I brought my laptop here tonight and opened it up and tried to get on to the site I was studying how to treat them and whatnot, and there's no internet here, so our communications are a little bit limited.
Oh, Gary, I've got a whole sheet here on it.
What?
I said I got a whole sheet here. So
I know, we got lots of info, but anyway...
So, yeah, tonight, like Gary said, we're talking about powder post beetles. And, like I said, they're from the family Lictidae, I think is how you pronounce that. Not that it matters that much. But if you're looking them up, Lictidae is whether it's from the family, the scientific name. They breed in dead and dried hardwoods, and that's what Gary's finding them in, especially when he's talking about barns and old outbuildings. A lot of those beams, when they're hand-hewed beams, they're beech, or what else are they?
Beech, maple. Actually, whatever the farmer had on his property. If they had beech, they were beech, and if he had maple, they were maple. Oak, they made them out of oak. They, you know, they didn't have, you know, back in those days when they made those barns, they didn't have triaxles and all this, you know, picking gear. And I remember I first moved up to New Kingston, and they were logging off the mountain above the farm. This was back in 64, 65, and I remember the old style logging. You wondered how those guys even did it. I mean, they had a bulldozer as a skidder. They pulled them down to landing, and before they loaded a truck, they'd have to build a platform, and they usually used like 4 or 5 logs, and to roll the logs on, and then they had the whole front was I never really investigated how they stacked them on top of one another, but you know, they had to build like a bridgeway right there on the edge of the road. And, you know, they had a truck with rails on one side, and they drove it up close to the ditch or whatever and, you know, rolled them on the truck. And that's how they got them to the mill. But, you know, once you got, and the first few logs hit the deck of the truck pretty hard because it was, you know, it was about 4 or 5 feet up. And, you know, they would roll them on till they couldn't get any more on. Then they'd put chain on and run them to the mill. But now it's a lot different. I mean, they move stuff around like nothing. It's pretty amazing that the hydraulics on them.
Great invention by man. There's no doubt.
It's an amazing idea, that hydraulics. You know, I think at my mill, all the stuff I lift and carry around, and I just, every day I tell myself, I just love hydraulics. I mean, it just, you get so much more done with little effort. And it was just one heck of amazing. And it's, what's amazing to me, it's an oil that's under pressure. And you can pick tons of weight with this. And it's just pretty incredible. We're pretty smart people. I mean, humans are really pretty intelligent, and you know, but on the flip side, maybe not so much for some other things. But anyway, all these little things that we've come up with in the past and make life easier, it's pretty awesome. So back to powder post beetles. We can treat them with, oh, I read it a half hour or so ago. Do you have any ways to treat that?
Well, we'll get there, Gary. Let's continue with where you find them, though, and what they are.
All right.
Well, they come mostly in the natural environment. They're living in dead branches, limbs of trees, and oftentimes their presence is completely overlooked. When they're in that stage, you know, we walk near them and by them and in the forest all the time, and it doesn't matter, right?
Well, they can lay dormant for up to 6 years.
Well, and they're part of the decomposition of wood.
Right.
So yeah. It's perfectly natural. But where they become a problem and what they're overlooked in is when they're in our house. So,
or your old barn, yeah.
Yeah, any of that type of our structures. So they can come in firewood.
Mm-hmm.
Not to scare you out of burning wood, but, you know, that could be a source. If you're cutting up those really, really old, dead, dying branches in the forest.
Yep.
That could be a source, and just another reason, cut a living tree for your firewood. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this a lot on From the Forest. Is cut the right tree for the right reason,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay to cut a living tree, especially if you're benefiting the health of the forest in another way or releasing another tree that produces food for wildlife, or like an apple or an oak or something. Maybe you get that pesky red maple down, because that powder post beetle is not going to be in that. You know, and other pests aren't going to be in that living tree that you're bringing into your house, but most of the time. But anyway, it comes in stored lumber. It could be in rafters and joists and finished wood. And what's really could be a problem is in furniture products, especially antiques.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's been stored in, like you said, in a barn or an outbuilding. You bring it into your house, and then you introduce that powder post beetle into your home, and it becomes a problem when they move into the structural components of that.
Yeah, because they can get under your baseboards and move right into your wall structure.
Yeah, they're in your floor joists.
They get somewhere where you can't get to them, like inside a wall that has an outside on it and an inside, they take a extremely long time to dismantle a building. Now, I would say it'd take at least 50, 60 years for them to you know, make a rafter so weak that it would have to, you know, break just under its own weight. But you can identify them by that fine, very fine dust. It's like talcum powder or baby powder. And if you see that around your, in your basement, and you just, most people would probably just ignore it and vacuum it up and not worry about it. But, you know, there's, it is something that you should be concerned about. If you catch it early, you know, I actually cut a lot of dead wood, and I have a kiln, but see, if I put a load of dead wood in my cellarway, I will spray it with Clorox water, because, you know, I do that with anything I bring in my cellar that hasn't been through the kiln anyway, because, you know, I've had wood come down there with ants in it, you know, these, all, you know, in the winter, they're froze up inside, and that, those you can get in new wood. I mean, if there's a hole or a void in a log, and, you know, your carpenter ants move in, and, you know, the eggs and everything get in the cellar, there's a couple of things you can do for that, but it's, I keep a bottle of Clorox down there, and, you know, and after I dump the wood, I just spray the whole front of the pile, and that'll make anything want to leave the premises. And, you know, actually, if you just put a, it's a powder. I'm trying to think of what that is. Borax makes it. But, see, I have a line. I put that powder in front of my wood, and if ants try to come into the cellar, if they walk over it, it'll kill them. So, and it's an organic powder.
Was it diatomaceous earth?
Boraxo, maybe. What's that?
Is it borax?
Boraxo, I think it is. it's made by borax, but I'm not sure. God, I can't think of it now. But I've used that for years. I keep a couple of cans of that in the cellar. But, you know, I don't burn that much live wood or dead wood. Since I've had the mill, I've been very fortunate to have kiln-dried wood. And, you know, I closed the mill, the commercial part of it, down in October 2019. And this year I was out, you know, and cutting logs and splitting them. And you know, there's a, you know, another asset to my kiln. I have the kiln, on anyway. So I have these metal bins that casters came in, that the caster companies that I cut dimension for would send them up, and I put, you know, scrap wood in them. They work good because you can store them outside when they're empty, and when they're full. See, I fill them up with wood, split wood, and, you know, I put them in the kiln, and, you know, I can have green you know, burnable wood in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Lucky you, Gary. The rest of us got a season for 2 years out there.
I know. You know, 150, 160 degrees for, you know, a week or two in the kiln, that seems to dry that stuff right out. So, you know, I'm fortunate to have that. Not everybody does, but, you know, and that's why, you know, if you have wood that you'd want to get rid of these powder post beetles, it's not attached to a building, you can, I mean, if you have small pieces, put it in your oven and just bring it up to maybe 150, 160 degrees for a few hours, and they aren't going to survive it. And, but anyway, you know, working with, because you don't want to build furniture out of it and have them come into your house. The biggest problem with having them in your house is they're so tiny that they can just about get anywhere, and in your walls would be a problem. But
yeah, so they're smaller than a quarter inch in length, but the sign that you see is the small holes they drill, and they breed.
And they're so perfectly round. Looks like a drill bit.
Yeah, they breed in that wood. And that's why they're drilling holes through there, and that's what makes it so structurally weak. But they might be a 16th of an inch hole. I would say they're maybe even smaller than that. But it's a fine powder-like sawdust that you'll see coming out of that hole from their boring. Holes are made by emerging adults, and they exit in like springtime, April through July, but really April, May is when it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when you're going to see this damage mostly. So coming up in the next 2 months, so maybe crawl underneath that crawl space of your house or garage or whatever and take a look next month.
Yeah, because we built a log cabin in New Kingston on the property 20 years ago or so, and then a couple of years after we made the cabin, we put a porch on it, and you know, we built the frame and the deck, and we were working on, well, we got the rafters cut for the, and that all went through the kiln down at my mill, but, you know, we had the center posts for the porch and the two side posts. I didn't have them, so I went out in the woods and I found a dead cherry and a dead beech nut, brought them back, and we installed them, and, you know, it was the following spring. We're looking on the porch deck, and both of these logs were full of these powder post beetles. So, you know, Max and Mitch are up there with me, and I said, well, we're going to have to jack this thing up and put a temporary post in and pull these posts out. And you know, they were lagged in, and it was a big job, so... And then on the porch, we had an old cast iron wood stove that we just replaced with another old cast iron wood stove in the cabin. And I got thinking, I said, geez, maybe we can smoke them out. So, you know, there's a bunch of dry leaves out and around and kind of sort of not. So what I did is I took duct tape, put it at the top of the post, and I had plastic. And I taped it tight on the top, and then I put where the chimney would go in the wood stove. We didn't have a smokestack on it. We just had the stove. I stuck that underneath the plastic, and, you know, for about 4 hours, we just kept a smoky fire in there. And no flames. We just wanted the smoke. And that afternoon, we did the one post, and the next morning, you know, we were there till 12, 1 o'clock the next day, and that morning we got up, we switched it over to the other post, and we killed them. We, you know, they suffocated from no oxygen. So that's another way you can get rid of them. If you haven't, you know, outside on a porch or something, you can't do that in your house.
I'd be cautious with that if you're not paying attention. I wouldn't want anybody to burn down their house. But.
No, I wouldn't want anybody to burn. That would get rid of them, though.
You'd have other problems, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd have bigger problems than post beetles. Well, but.
You're listening to WIOX From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. We talk about a different forest-related topic on 91.3 FM. And this week we got on Gary Mead. We're talking about powder post beetles. When we return, we're going to get back into management of those beetles.
There's a place where the sun doth shine and the birds keep time with the pines up yonder. That's the home of my Caroline. She's dancing in the sky. Oh, how sweet when we golden streets of the great white valley. These old chains around my feet, they're pulling me back down. Caroline, oh Caroline, I'll be home just at any old time. The grave in the garden will be satisfied till your name's next to mine. I'm
My bones do break and my hands do shake as I lie awake at time's cruel slaughter. But if I die before I wake, I'm gonna see my Caroline. Caroline, oh Caroline, I'll be home just any old time. The grave and the garden won't be satisfied till your name's next to mine. There's a place where the sun doth shine and the birds keep time with the pines up yonder. That's the home of my Caroline. She's dancing in the sky. Caroline, oh Caroline, I'll be home just any old time. The grave and the garden won't be satisfied till your name's next to mine. Caroline, my Caroline. Satisfied until your name is next to mine.
All right, that was Caroline by Coulter Wall. Anyway, this is From the Forest on WIOX Community Radio 91.3 FM. Every Wednesday, we talk about a different forest related topic from 6 to 7 p.m., and every third Wednesday, we get on Gary Mead from Gary Mead Gallery in Margaville, and he talks about a different tree species usually, but tonight we're talking about something that affects multiple tree species, and that's powder post beetles.
Yeah, and I was telling Ry when the song was on that, you know, they do get in those old tools, so, you know, if you're buying old tools at auctions, you see a bunch of little holes in it, just take a paintbrush, a little paint thinner on it, and paint them up and lay them on a rag, and that'll end the career of the powder post beetle in that. But the hardest places to get rid of them is in structures. And if, like I say, they would take 50 years to weaken a beam, but you know, a lot of these old barns where the roof started leaking, I kind of blame some of that on the powder post beetles, because once they weaken the beam and the weight of the beam actually can't even hold itself up, it starts sagging, and you know, once that sags, then it opens a little hole in the roof, and then the rain gets in, and well, when the rain gets in, the beetles, they move right out and they go to a drier spot because they don't like moisture. So I imagine you could probably steam them out as well. But, you know, what's in the wood is, you know, they go in there to lay their eggs and multiply and regenerate. So but anyway, they could be devastating if they're, they're not taken care of, but you have, if you see them, it's nothing to panic where they're going to take your place down. Thoroughly investigate, because every single problem would be different, you know, depending on the location and, you know, how to treat it. And there's different chemicals that you can use and sprays and like that, and that'll take care of them. But for the most part, they're not a devastating something that you have time to take care of them. And lots of times after you treat them, you know, you might see, you know, a little where you didn't, a few of them maybe didn't quite get treated good enough. So if you notice after you treat them a year later, 2 years later, you have a little more dust there, just retreat it, and they will disappear. And mainly it's you know, heat and different chemicals.
Yeah, well, if you're going to be, I mean, some best practices, if you're going to be working with lumber, anything that comes into your house, have it kiln dried. And that's really not even the first reason to kiln dry your lumber. Gary can tell you way more reasons than that. Kiln drying is the way to go for a lot of reasons. Sanded and varnished wood also discourages powder post beetle adults from laying eggs. There's fewer crevices for them to start digging into and boring into.
Well, they won't eat through that. They like raw. They like their stuff raw.
Exactly. Most of the time when they're treated, it's with a fumigant, if that's possible. But usually that requires a licensed applicator, so you're going to have to hire somebody for that. That'd be like if it was underneath your structure of your house or something like that. The good thing about fumigants is they don't leave any residues behind, so it can be used. Certain products can be used indoors.
Mm-hmm.
And now have to be reapplied. But borates, I think, is what you were trying to think of earlier, Gary.
Borax.
Surface sprays containing borates are usually applied if it's going to be a spray to kill these things. But they're only effective on surfaces that have not been varnished or waxed, so it can't be used on any type of furniture or especially antiques. That's mainly for like barn beams or something like that. If you're going to be looking at antique furniture, ask where it was stored. If it was in a barn or something like that, maybe you want to take a closer look at it.
Well, they're easy to identify by them tiny little holes. And that's a sure sign. You don't even have to see the dust. But, if you get your, piece of furniture and maybe you're going to refinish it and, put another, maybe a stain it or clear coat it, and that will take care of them just on in itself. Because whatever's in there, when they hatch, they'll come out and leave. They won't stay in there. But I always use, like I say, paint thinner on all my old stuff. And
ever put old furniture in your kiln to get rid of a pest? Is that possible to do or no?
Yep. Yeah, that's very possible. Yeah, I've done that. Two summers ago, I got somebody called me and they said, "Oh, we got an old building that they bought the property. It was an old log cabin that was falling down." And the guy said, "Well, there's some chestnut in there." And oh my God, I was so boom, ba-doom, ba-doom. And I'm thinking, "Oh, I'll be right up." And I made an appointment, went up to see it. And I thought I was going to drive up to this rundown building. And in the back room, there was a pile of chestnut boards. And I was going to load them on my truck and drive them back to the mill. Well, this was full of chestnut, but it was paneling, ceiling boards. So I had to dismantle this piece by piece. And, there was raccoon and hedgehog and poo. I mean, they lived in there and chewed stuff up, and what a mess. And there was some nice old handmade furniture in there, and, that I took back to my kiln. And actually, everything I took out of that building, I put in my kiln, and just to kill whatever might be on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know. Fecal matter has so many different varieties of bacteria and E. coli and all that stuff. And, it's just another part of the nature breaking stuff down, making it, putting it back in the earth. But, when you're not ready for that, you don't want it around you. So, I have put furniture in. And a lot of the stuff that's stored in barns, they don't go... in my past experience, they don't bore into the... And these you can't hardly even tell because, a piece of furniture, when they put a finish on it, whatever, they don't do the... And especially antiques, they never finish the inside. And they rarely finish where the bottoms of the feet. So these bores, if they did get close, they wouldn't go through the visible wood that, had the finish on it. they would bore through where there was no finish on it and get into the wood that way.
Is that just an old practice, or is a reason not to finish the bottom of the feet? And
I don't know why, because I actually learned from that. I learned that when I put a floor down, I seal the bottom, the tongue in the groove, and ends. Because it, and you know, that's why in old furniture you get, you open up the doors of an old dry sink or something, and the boards they put in the bottom are warped. 90% of the time, they're not flat anymore. And that's because they weren't finished. If they would have rubbed something on them. But it was the old mentality, I guess, where, you know, you don't see it, so it don't matter. But when you don't see it, it does matter. It matters a lot. And, you know, all countertops, tabletops, you know, when I sell them and I tell the people, I said, you know, if you put this in your kitchen or your bathroom or anywhere else and you seal just the ends and the top, it's going to warp on you. It has to warp, because what happens is you don't have equal it's the wood is suffering on the bottom and it's relaxed on top. And what I mean by suffering on the bottom is you have that dry, open grain that hasn't been sealed. So if moisture gets in the house, it's going to soak up into that like a sponge. But the top isn't going to soak anything up because it's sealed. So what you get is the fibers underneath will expand, and that causes warpage. Or else if it gets too dry inside, it's just a good idea to seal the ends, top and bottom. Because I, you know, people that buy countertops and tabletops, I said, well, if you don't seal the bottom, I'm not guaranteeing anything because it's going to warp. I said, it has to. And, but, you know, that's the whole, you have to put, even if it's, I mean, they make them, they make, well, I was telling Ryan before, too, the finishing world has become a lot different than I ever, you know, and, you know, I've been doing this for 42 years, and I can't even get the stuff that I used to use. And, you know, I have to keep figuring out how to finish things, you know, with what's available. So, and, you know, linseed oil, anything like anything that will seal it. You can use old motor oil. It doesn't matter. If as long as it's sealed and, you know, it'll, you know, be completely equal on the top and the bottom. And just because you don't see it, it does matter in a piece of furniture. And then, again, you know, a lot of these powder post beetles wouldn't be in old furniture if they sealed the insides of them. You know, and, you know, a lot of those, the mission stuff especially, the inside don't have a finish on it, and the outside does, and that's why you see the cracks in the panels and the warpage. You know, if they were sealed inside and out, and, but I don't know why. I think the craftsmen, some of the craftsmen, I think, knew that. Because I rebuilt the brownstone, and we never found any powder post beetles in there. But I helped do some of the woodwork in a couple of brownstones in Manhattan years ago. And, you know, we pulled paneling off the wall. This stuff was finished on the inside as well as the outside. And, you know, as soon as I pulled one off, and because, you know, we had to replace a lot of it, and I took a couple of panels back to my shop to replicate them and get cutters made and all. And but that was, I think, the only, I think the higher end people would pay a little more for stuff and get it done just a little bit better. But the craftsmen that actually put that in must have understood it. Same thing, you know, in the ceilings, because I replaced you know, mahogany and butternut and whatnot that were, you know, raised panels in the ceiling. I pulled them down, and, you know, some of them were chopped up, and I just pulled a few down just to get the details so I could, replicate it. And they were sealed. You know, when you, in the back, they, well, I used little screws to hold my raised panels in, but, you know, back in those days, they just used glazing points. And, but the panel was sealed, all the frame was sealed, all the ends, and, you know, there was a little more finish on the side you saw, but everything else was sealed, and that's what kept stuff from going, getting in there. And, I mean, if you could, on a hot, you know, a nice warm summer day, if you have them in your basement, you could have, you know, just somebody come in and clear coat it with some, they have a lot of nice, it's an oxymoron, but it's, they're water-based finishes. They're very expensive, but they do work. And, you know, something like that is, I mean, it's water washable, but see, when the water evaporates, the oil doesn't, and the oil that's, I don't know how they get the water and the oil to mix so famously without separating. That has me baffled, but anyway, I know I use it for exterior and interior finishes now, and it's really an amazing product because mainly all I want out of a piece of wood is when you to see the grain and it gives a little depth. I mean, to make it super shiny, it glares at you and it really doesn't, you know, it doesn't look normal or natural. But, you know, if you take a satin or a semi-gloss and rub that in, and, you know, it deepens the grain. You can really see down in and see what the wood's made of. And in my career, I've learned that when you put a log up on the deck and you cut that, you're cutting boards off it, that wood that you're cutting green, at the end result, is going to look exactly the same as it does when you're cutting it, if you put clear coat on it. But from the sawmill green till it gets dried, it changes so much that it's, and you kind of wonder if it's ever going to be pretty again. But once you put it through the planer, and, you know, some of the comes back, but then once you put a finish on it, you'll see exactly what you saw when you were.
Really is amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I don't know. I planed a piece of ash. Ash really seems to oxidize a gray color.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? I planed a piece of ash that I don't know. I looked at it in the pile and I thought, man, that's never going to come back. That looks terrible.
It's just surface. Yeah.
It's all surface. I put it through the planer, and that white, yellow, pale color of ash came right out, and beautiful.
Beautiful, yeah. It's really, really something else. But, you know, I had this, well, part of that job in Long Island I had. I'm not Long Island, but Manhattan. The people had a second home in Roxbury here, and I didn't have a mill and all that at the time. We needed quarter sawn red oak, so I ordered it and blah, blah, come in from Ohio. And, you know, it's very specialized wood, quarter sawn. And the boards come in, and, you know, she was all excited. And she met me at my house in Arkville, where my shop was then. And we're unloading the wood, and she writes a check out and pays a guy, and I could see her. She just didn't look happy. And she goes, oh, my God, I can't believe what I just wrote a check out for this garbage wood. And I said, Marcy, go home, relax. I'm going to go in the shop. I'm going to plane a board, and I'll bring it to Roxbury, and I'll show it to you. And so I took a, you know, 3-foot section off, and I planed only one side, and I brought it to her, and she couldn't believe it was the same wood. And I said, Well, that's what happens, you know, all the kiln and it shrinks and, you know, it's very, I mean, it gets put under, you know, wind velocity that's 30, 35 miles an hour, you know, day in and day out for 2 or 3 weeks, and temperatures of 150 to 60 degrees. It gets a little cranky during that session, you know. But if you do it right, it's the best thing for it. And you know, that's when you plane it down, it looks beautiful. And so if you see something out there that looks horrible looking and you want to, you know, wonder about it, I mean, if you have a little planer, you know, somebody has a little workshop, whatever, a sander, just throw that on there and let the grain come out. And well, wood speaks to people. And, you know, I see it at the gallery all the time because, you know, I get people down there and they might be grumpy when they first come to the kiln or in a big hurry and have to be somewhere else. But, you know, they walk into the gallery and all that wood is so warm and wonderful that it calms them down. And they seem to slow down just a bit. And it's a very calming, soothing thing. And I think that's, you know, what makes me so happy in the world I live in is because I have wood all around me, and it's so every species. I mean, for years you guys have been trying to tell me, you keep asking me what's my favorite wood. Well, I can't pick a favorite wood. I can't have a favorite wood because each individual species is good in its own way. You can't take a piece of white pine and use it for outside tables, you know, without having a problem. And certain woods are good inside, certain woods are good outside. It depends on the application. You don't want to saw white oak and use it for studs for your house.
That's a shame.
Well, not only that, is it would be hard to build, but anyway, and heavy. And so every wood has its own in reality, has its own course and what it's really the best for. And you want to kind of pick and choose and use, you know, the species of wood is, you know, for whatever the project you're working on that will turn out the best. But, you know, powder post beetles, they don't care if it's white oak, red oak, rock oak, beech nut, butternut, hickory oak, any kind of cherry. They go in everything. And like Ryan said, which is the key to these powder post beetles, is they're part of the breaking down process. And, you know, that's why they're here. But, you know, you want them in the woods because you need that stuff to mulch down and turn into, you know, back into earth. And it opens up the wood and moisture gets in there. And, you know, when you get moisture and drying shrinking and expanding, it breaks it down quicker. So, you know, but you don't want them in your house, and they're hard, you can't live with them. And old barns and stuff, you really want to, I mean, if you had an old barn or garage that didn't had a lot of ventilation in it, I mean, you could start a, you know. And then when I'm talking smoky fire, you don't want flames. You just want something. But you could smoke them out of there. And, you know, if there's a lot of fresh air going through, you know, and 2 or 3 months later, especially in the summer, I mean, the smoke would, you know, smoky smell would evaporate and leave the place. But, you know, with the powder post beetles, it's, I mean, you got to suffocate them somehow and keep them out of your structure. But if you do discover them, you know, do research on them before you just, you know, don't panic because they're not fast. I mean, like if you discover them this week and in a year your house is going to fall down, that's not even possible for these guys to work that fast. And sometimes I read that they can go into dormancy for, you know, 6 years. and then just come back. I think our insects are one of the most amazing things that we have on the planet, because they can freeze 20, 30 below zero, and then when it warms up above freezing, they come back to life. How cool is that?
Speaking of that,
a fly can freeze and blow from Roxbury to Margaville, and then the sun comes out and it comes to life and flies away.
I had some ticks on me last week when it hit 60 degrees. It didn't take long for that snow to melt, and then there they were. I had about six of them on me.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You check yourself every night?
I check myself every hour.
No kidding.
So when I'm outside, I'm always looking down at my legs. It's just a habit I've come into.
Yeah.
You find them that way. And I don't get bit that often. Maybe 1 to 6 times a year, which seems like a lot, but you got to understand what I'm doing. I'm outside. Yep. All the time.
Well, you know what I did? Last year I started doing it when I was picking blackberries. I have a bottle that, I don't know, I put about 2 tablespoons in a quart of water of Clorox. And I spray my pants and my boots. And they won't jump on it. They won't.
You haven't had problems then?
They won't. If you just spray your boots, because that's how they, I mean, they, unless they're coming from a tree branch or something, 90% of the time they're on the ground.
Yeah, you find them in brush, though, too, walking through brush. So they'll be on your pant legs then.
Yeah.
That's where I usually get them from, I think.
So, you know, I sprayed myself from the waist down and went blackberry picking. I didn't get any on me last year. But, you know, the year before I had a tick bite and I ended up in the hospital. That was pretty, I had babesiosis, they called it.
Yeah, babesiosis.
That was worse than a powder post beat by a long shot.
Well, Gary, do you have a poem you want to read?
I do. I haven't read People and Trees in a while.
Well, good. That's a good one.
And I want to read that again tonight. This was back in 2015. It's called People and Trees. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Soils of the earth outstanding, for us both life sustaining. Sweet fresh air in the atmosphere, that with trees we also share. Grand yellow ball high in the sky, sharing together, needing sun to survive. Water in rivers, streams, and the rains, hydrating us both, flowing in our veins. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Both have roots deep, standing firm, traced back thousands of years. Realize both in years of age by calculated scientific measurements. Growth ring and fingerprint patterns look very much the same, each owning their own identity. No two patterns, a perfect match. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Some may look almost alike, never two exactly the same, like every snowflake or drop of rain, boulder, stone, or grain of sand. We will both get old and die, going back where we started from. A very strong force inside both of us. Sometime while walking by a tree, say to that tree, you are a lot like me. Living for each other every day will secure our bond in harmony. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. So, springtime, folks, go out and hug trees. And you can, on a day when the, and I've done this before, you can feel the sap running through the trees this time of year. If you give them a good, you know, you don't have a lot of clothes on, of course, you know, T-shirt and bare arms. And if you hug a tree and hold it tight, you can actually feel the vibration of the sap going up through the tree. It's pretty cool. I love trees.
Well, it's about time for me to go hug my maple trees.
Right.
I've got 25 of them tapped that I'm sure ran today.
Oh, man, yeah. I think it got this afternoon was a completely switch from last night and this morning.
Yeah, days like today and tomorrow, they're looking to be about perfect for maple season.
Yep. And I think next week's going to be pretty good. Well, at least up in this neck of the woods.
Yeah, and central Delaware, northern Delaware, and eastern Delaware looking pretty good. You get towards central Ulster County and out that way where Ryan reports back to me the weather report about his trees. He's worried the season's going to end pretty quick for him. But
yeah, but anyway. Well, that's what happens down there. And I talked to Tim Johnson this past Tuesday or Monday and asked him how, because he makes quite a bit up there in Hawkett, and I said, how's the maple syrup and blah and this and that, and he goes, well, I ain't run yet. One day they got a little bit, he said, but wasn't enough to boil. And so up in Hawkett they haven't even started yet.
It's amazing. I'd be surprised if he didn't have sap today.
But on a bad year, well, he might have had up there today, but on a bad year up there, he makes 300. On a good season, he'll make 1,200 gallons of syrup. But he has a nice setup up there. And, I was down to Hubble's a week ago Tuesday, and they had already made 70 gallons. And, Toby, they put a vacuum system in this year, and Toby said they get twice as much sap from the trees as they did without it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I don't think they have the reverse osmosis, though.
Maybe next year after they got twice as much sap.
Because I said I got 6 pallets of softwood at the mill, or 6 bundles, 8 to 12 foot, 14 foot long slab wood. And he said, well, if I get low, I'll be over for him. But he said, I think I got enough for this year.
Do you sell it to him?
Oh, I trade him. We do. They press apple juice and cider and stuff, and we don't exchange money, but it's just little trade-off things.
Well, that's okay.
I need a piece of equipment, draw it out to Davenport, and that's when we first started trading. That was about 6-7 years ago, and I said, geez, how much you want for that? And he said, what are you doing with that slab wood? And I said, do you want it? It's softwood. And he said, yeah, I use it for sap. And I said, well, would you take that for trade? He said, yeah, most certainly.
All right.
So after he dropped the machine off, he over in Davenport, we come back and loaded that up. He took it back to the sap house. And we said, nice about that, he can get 5 and 6 foot lengths in the stove. And he said, I just cut them in half. And there's a band, 2 bands on it. And he said, it's so easy to put in the shed and store it, cut it.
Well, Gary,
it looks like time has ticked away on us again.
It happens again. It's another hour that just flies by, right?
Yes, it does.
Well, if you just missed us, this was From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., we talk about a different forest-related topic. And tonight, Gary Mead was on because it's the third Wednesday in the month. We talked about Powder Post Beetles. So.
Yeah, and I'm opening a gallery back up here one of these days shortly. So I haven't put my signs out in a while, and I've been by appointment only, but I'm going to just open it up and let people freely walk through, and it's still masks and all that. And if you want to meet me there personally, you have to make an appointment. And but I'm going to start putting my signs out, and come in, and it's an educational center as much as it is a gallery. And there's so much to learn there. And my tree books, I sold a bunch to a library in Queens yesterday, and I was so excited about that because, we're getting stuff starting to move again, and that's pretty cool. Because last year I wasn't able to advertise, do readings, no different, no forest festivals, no festivals at all, and that's where I did most of my book sales. But we're finally getting back to that, and relax, and we'll try not to go overboard with being too comfortable. The minute you let your guard down, something comes back and bops you on the head. But anyway,
all right, everyone,
just be loving and peaceful, and have a good month, and I'll talk to you next month about another wood related product. In the meantime, every Wednesday, tune in, because these guys have a lot to offer, and there's a lot of education that goes through these microphones on a Wednesday night. All right. Peace, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
From the forest.